This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by the Parent House. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being here today. We're going to review the recent session of the Oregon State Legislature through the perspective of State Senator Dallas Hurd. Well, you made it through.
Yeah, kind of. I tell you, Kyle, it's the last two sessions, man, talk about intense, you know, just so much being thrown at you. It's just, I don't know how to put it. It's kind of like being in front of a baseball pitch machine that throws them kind of randomly at you. And it just seems like it never ends. So, I was very pleased overall with part of the outcome. You know, obviously the main situation was to defeat this crazy cap and trade tax legislation. We were successful in that. I was very disappointed though that the majority party completely. I don't know how people that are paying attention this closely and watched what the Senate Democrats and House Democrats and the governor, for that matter, said over the last couple of weeks during the walkout. It doesn't make sense to me that people would take them seriously now, because they said, hey, we need to finish the people's work. We've got all these critically important budgets to all of our communities that need to be passed, which I agree with. We did need to pass those. That's why we said on Thursday last week in the morning, before the Democrats announced from the House and Senate that they would not be coming back the rest of the session, that we were coming back for that final Sunday. And we did. I really feel like it shows that they're not genuine in what they say, that this is just a bunch of political mumbo jumbo to try to make us look bad and make themselves look like the victims somehow, even though they're the ones that are in complete control of what has turned into a schoolyard of bullies by them. And so it was just really amazing to me that they are yelling and screaming about how important all these budgets are and how important so many of these technical fix type pieces of policy legislation were. But yet when we offered to come back for that last Sunday, when it was guaranteed procedurally that they couldn't pass cap and trade, but we could pass everything else, they just picked up their ball and went home.
What did you guys do on Sunday?
Well, we got there. I got to the Capitol building around 10 o'clock in the morning, changed my clothes in my office, went to about a 20-minute caucus meeting in our caucus office with the Senate Republicans, and then around 10 after 11 a.m., like we said we would, to the public and to the Democrats, we went down to the Senate floor and waited for them to show up, and they never did.
And how long did you guys all hang around?
I was in the building, I would say, probably about 2 hours from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. As far as when I got to the Senate floor to when I left, I hung around for about two more hours. But it was obvious that the Democrats weren't coming. I mean, the lights weren't even turned on in the building. There was no staff. I mean, I just think it's hilarious how uneven the power balance is in this state, and how they continue, especially with the Portland media writing the headlines, they just continue to get away with it. I mean, when we say enough is enough, you're bringing this aggressive action against our communities that they economically will not be able to sustain. It will be the end of our economy, thus the end of our culture. So we can't come here because we can't allow that to happen. They show up and they abuse the position of being in the majority by actually having a live microphone that everybody's listening to, the media, the citizens, everything, while they control these chambers. They abused those positions by trashing me and my colleagues every single day about what scumbags we were and how we had abandoned our job, which we've gone over this over and over. It's not a job, it's a duty. It's a duty to represent. It's a duty to serve your community and ensure that their futures are protected. Well, these guys, when they didn't get every single thing they wanted, they just said, well, we're not coming back. So when they criticize us in the future by running special sessions or whatever the heck they're going to do to fix this budget mess that they created by not coming in on Sunday, I hope people remember that they had the full authority and ability to be there, and they chose not to be.
So going through the time away, of course, obviously these days people can do a lot of things remotely. You can still work on things, get things done. But what was it like to come back into the Capitol building after being gone for a number of days, just to walk back in?
Yeah, it was different. You know, it's a great question. It was I don't know if eerie is quite the right word, but somewhere along that line of definition, you know, it was kind of eerie because, like I said, there was no lights on. There was no staff anywhere. They quite literally picked up their ball, their desk, their everything, and just took it as if they owned the whole state. That's what I want people to focus in on here and realize. Like, these folks in the Democratic majority, primarily from Portland and Eugene, really do think they are entitled to not influence, but to power. And that power comes from us, the people. We do not give legislative strength, legislative power to any one person. We give it to ourselves, the people. This is supposed to be a group of citizen part-time legislators that are not supposed to be going to Salem to represent themselves as an individual in their own quest for power. It's not to represent a political party. It's supposed to represent, in my case, 135,000 citizens' freedoms and rights. And it just seems like to me that the servant aspect is completely just gone when it comes to these Democrats. Now, like I've said before, there are plenty of Republicans, the bodies are piled deep and far, that have done similar things in past legislative sessions long before I was ever there, when the Republicans were in the majority. That's not how it's going to be if you ever find me being in charge of a Republican majority here in Oregon. That's just not how we're going to do it. That's never how we should have done it. And it's not a party-specific problem. It's a human character issue. And that's what we've got to start fixing in America. Until we get over this very flawed way of looking at life, as we try to continue to struggle to stay free citizens, if we continue to look at things through the prism of Republican versus Democrat, and not citizens working together with other citizens to find compromise and good solutions to the problems we all face on a daily basis, that still protects all of our freedoms and rights, regardless of whether you're Caucasian, African American, male, female, LGBTQ, or non-LGBT community. It really shouldn't matter. Freedoms and rights should not be on the chopping block just because you and some pals of yours have formed some sort of a group that says we're in the majority now, so everybody else that's not part of our group has no freedoms and no rights. That is completely backwards of what this country is founded on and what makes it the greatest place ever.
Now, today, just a couple of hours ago, the governor put out a release saying she was taking climate action, put out the executive order. We're still going through that. But from what you know so far, do you feel like what you're hearing about it is more comprehensive, or did it dial back a bit, the cap and trade proposal, or where are we at?
The limited amount that I know about it, because frankly, I haven't been focused on anything that Governor Brown has been doing as of late, because I'm switching gears into focusing on the November elections. First and foremost, we got to get strong, good character Republicans elected in the primaries, and then we need to do the best we can to get them over the finish line in the general elections, not so we can dominate this state like the other party is doing, but so that we can actually bring some sanity back to the table and have a well-balanced representation of power and influence in Salem. But to your point on Governor Brown's proposal, from what I've read up on before we came on the air, it looks much the same as Senate Bill 1530. It seeks to accomplish many of the same goals that legislation did. But you know, this is just what the Brown administration does. They threaten, they do some executive orders to do end arounds of the legislature when they can't get everything they want. I mean, let's face it. I mean, this governor's been in office now as our governor for almost 6 years now, and she's enjoyed the ability to just rubber stamp everything her super hardcore leftist super majority House and Senate Democrats have put to her, and the second thing they can't just get whatever they want through, she's going to do an end around and do an executive order. Now, again, in fairness, the Republican president that is our president does a lot of the same things. So for me, this isn't much more than just a distraction to kind of get us off focus of what's really important, which is winning some House and Senate seats this November here in the state. But at the same time, it is a cause for concern, because I frankly haven't really seen anything come out of Governor Brown's office in the time she's been governor that ever gives me confidence that she's actually looking at the real consequences for the economy. It's the wrong way of looking at things, folks, to say, well, I'm for a policy because it's going to hurt big business guys, or I'm against a policy because it's going to help big business guys, like, or women that own big businesses. You should never look at it through that lens. We should always look at it through how is it going to affect the middle class, and thus how is it going to affect the lower income classes that are seeking to achieve upward economic mobility. And if it's going to hurt the job creators, that hurts all of us. And that's what this kind of legislation, or in this case, this kind of just force of hand executive action, that's going to be the end result. You can't punish success and expect your economy to continue. You can't do things that way. You have to incentivize change. And the only way, in my opinion, thus far as I've looked into it, that you can truly incentivize change of continuing to reduce greenhouse gases is you offer up comprehensive plans of education so people understand the financial benefits of adopting new emerging technologies like an electric car. I've had an electric car and I put almost 200,000 miles on it in the last, what has it been, like 6 years now? I love that car. It saves me money. And it doesn't put anything, as far as exhaust goes, out the tailpipe. Why? Because there isn't a tailpipe, at least when it's burning electricity. So at the end of the day, tax credits to incentivize people adopting new technologies like, I don't know, a semi-electric Tesla delivery truck. How do you afford the semi-Tesla truck that costs $200,000 if the state of Oregon has already taken all your money in the form of all these carbon credits just so you can continue to operate? Well, the answer is you don't have any money to do it. So to me, we got to incentivize change, not punish success.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. State Senator Dallas Hurd, the interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248. Lars Larson coming at 1 on News Radio 1240 KQEN. Later, KQEN Local Talk at 4. It's True Wealth with David Littlejohn and Katie Shook. And on tomorrow's program for Inside Douglas County, a review of the session continues. We'll be talking to State Representative Cedric Hayden. State Senator Dallas Hurd in with us this afternoon. What about the legislation that didn't make it through? What about now, some things were taken care of yesterday by the emergency board, like the Pendleton area flood relief and a few things like that. But what about other things? I mean, members of both parties had things they wanted that didn't make it through.
Well, for the Republicans, we as a point of principle didn't run anything that we, at least on the Senate side, that we felt was like on a complex critical scale. We ran technical fix policy legislation because that's what the voters intended clearly when this ballot measure was pushed through that took us to annual sessions. The short session is not something you can responsibly run complex or controversial legislation through and do an effective job of creating quality finished products. It's just not. And so a lot of us ran stuff that, you know, it was important to us, but it wasn't something, you know, that's going to keep us awake at night that it didn't pass. Tomorrow's another day, so to speak. And so I can't really speak to much as far as just mass devastation across the, you know, the caucus, as far as any individuals that I recall saying, oh my gosh, if we don't get this through, it's just going to be the end of life. There was none of that. And so, you know, I felt like we held true to the principles that of what the short session was supposed to be. And I'm pleased with that. The House side, I think, did have some folks that had some legislation that they were really concerned about. I know Representative David Brock Smith had one that was really important to a school district in our two districts here on the coast. That obviously didn't get through. In fact, I think only three bills successfully made it through the entire legislative process. You know, so yeah, it's difficult to have this kind of dysfunction and chaos, if you will. But let's also remember, 10 years ago, we did not have annual short sessions. So there's really nothing different out of the fact that we didn't achieve much of completing a bunch of legislation than what we experienced in the previous 100 years that this state's been a functioning state government. So I'm not going to worry about it too much. The other party was the one that was running the hardcore stuff that I felt like was grossly out of line of what the intent of that short session was supposed to be.
Now, last week, as we were covering the walkout and what was going on, did a lot of interviews on this program and in the morning as well. And I was able to talk to Herman Bertschinger for the Senate Republicans and Christine Drazen for the Senate Republicans. And they kind of shared their perspectives from being in the leadership side. It was interesting to hear from Representative Drazen talking about, you know, still maintaining phone conversations with the House Speaker every day and the back and forth that went on. And Herman Bertschinger as well talking about his comments with, you know, discussions with Peter Courtney. Now, yesterday we get word that Herman Bertschinger has decided not to, if I understand correctly, not to file for another term in office after a number of years there. Do you feel like the stress of the session And last year, regardless of maybe which party people are in, because I think there's probably stress for people from both perspectives, do you feel like that's going to have some rippling effects of folks just saying, I'm going to go do something else?
No, not necessarily. I think the caucus leader, which was Senator Bertschinger, obviously had a unique amount of concentrated stress placed on him because he's in that position of servant leadership, right? I mean, if you're a decent leader at all, which I believe Herman to be, certainly a man of character who cares about his district just viciously, it gets to you, this stuff. And when you are in the position that he was in or is in of being the caucus leader for all of the Senate Republicans present in that chamber, that gets to you after a while. Then throw on top of the fact that you got a 7+ hour round trip commute to make from where he lives out in the Grants Pass area. You know, his wife passed away tragically about 3 years ago, and that's really been hard on the senator. You just know that Herman really loved and still does love his late wife. And I think all that time away from family, you know, he's got children, grandchildren, friends, obviously, that are abundant for him down in the Grants Pass area. I think after a while, it just an individual starts to ask, you know, how can I still do this and do it well? And if that's really a question after a while, it's probably time to step away. And I think that's really the conclusion he came to. I just want to say that I'm just so grateful for Herman's leadership, because without Senator Bertschinger as our caucus leader, and I genuinely mean this, I don't know if we would have had the courage to really stand up to the bully. You don't have to get along with your leader and agree with them on every single thing that comes out of your leadership office. But if you can actually invest in a person that you believe is going to be forthright and straightforward and steadfast in what they believe and how they go about defending it and whatnot, that's a good thing. And we had that. And I'm just so grateful that we had him for 2 sessions, because, like I said, I don't know if we would have ever boycotted what the supermajority Democrats were doing to our constituents. And we would now be on this road to economic ruin. And right now, because of Herman's leadership, that's still not the case. We're still in this fight. We still have a fighting chance to not only survive, but hopefully over the next few election cycles, see some fundamental change, not only in our state government, but our federal government representation from this state, to where hopefully us in the rural communities can actually get back to having a fighting chance of having equal rights to decide our own futures.
So going forward now, what kinds of things for you and the other lawmakers are on the schedule? Do you have a break before you're back in Salem for various meetings, or does it just continue?
So, you know, like we've talked about in the past, Kyle, the interim especially is kind of what you make of it. This job is what you make of it, this position of representation. And so, being that the crazy person that I am, I'm actually going back to Salem starting at 3:00 this afternoon for an event that's important for me to be at. And I anticipate that starting next week, I'll be spending probably at least a day, if not up to 3 days a week up there pretty consistently throughout the rest of the year. Why? Because we've got to continue to develop our party platform and the brand that I feel like we always have represented, but have not done a great job of articulating and putting out there in clear form for people to absorb. And I've talked about it before. The Republican Party is the party of the working class. It is the party of anyone who promotes the freedoms and liberties for not only for themselves but for their neighbors. If that defines who you are, this is the family you want to be a part of. And so I'm going to be doing everything I can to continue to build those coalitions of folks that fall within that definition that I just referenced, and you know, help us get over the top in some really key races. The Senate race over on the coast from Coos Bay up to Lincoln City is our number one target. That Democratic incumbent is now retiring, so it's an open seat. Our previous nominee for that race is Dick Anderson, the mayor from Lincoln City. He is running again for that position, so we're starting, you know, right in the right spot. We don't have to rebuild all that name recognition, and those folks should have a good idea of what he stands for. And now that we've had that long time, 20-plus year incumbent move out of the way, hopefully people will give it a real open-minded approach as far as deciding who's going to be their next senator over there. Then we step in into the Gresham Senate seat, which was Senator Lori Monas Anderson from the Democratic Party. Really good person. I have to say, I've always enjoyed my conversations with Senator Monas Anderson. She's definitely one of the good people, but she's retiring, and so we're hoping to pick up that seat as well. And then finally, you know, I'll be working on the Secretary of State's race for Kim Thatcher's campaign as well. If we can win those three seats, I think you'll actually find the 2020s could be a great new opportunity to go back to a time and an era where we actually got along with each other, because people will have equal seats at the table. And it's amazing when both people know they can't get past the other one without being in unity with the other one. It's amazing how people start treating each other decently.
All right, State Senator Dallas Hurd, thanks for coming in.
Hey, God bless and have a great week.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by The Parent House. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.